This is Lego Football.
Let's talk calcio in this special episode, a dedication to Diego Maradona, the Serie A legend who would have turned 62 over the weekend, revered by so many. We celebrate his birth and his contribution to Italian football. Doesn't that just give you goosebumps every time you're on the Lego Football Podcast with your host, David Farini? Happy to be here once again to celebrate the great man that is Diego Armando Maradona. And that audio coming from the Argentina-England game in the 1986 knockout clash, which saw the hand of God. That goal there where he's beaten a whole host of England players and finished off from an angle must be known as the foot of God, also known as El Dios. Maradona turned 62 over the weekend. Yes, he may have passed on into the next realm, although for many, his spirit lives on, including for all of us here at Lego Football. So for the next couple of minutes, we'll turn to the book of Emmett Gates of the Gentleman Ultra, also writing a piece on Grande Diego. Diego Maradona, six of his greatest goals for Napoli, as published in The Guardian. This is coming from Emmett's article. Perhaps no player in the history of the game is as embedded into the fabric of a city as Maradona is in Naples. His image is everywhere. Negotiate your way through the narrow Spaccanapoli region of the city and you will see Neapolitans selling just about anything that can adorn Maradona's face. Make your way to the similarly claustrophobic Quartieri Spagnoli district. Walk up the steep cobbled streets that bustle with everyday life and gaze at his wall-sized mural. Order a Neapolitan-style cafe in Bar Nilo on the corner of Via San Biagio, dedicated solely to Maradona, and observe your surroundings, complete with a single strand of Maradona mane stolen from his headrest while he was on a flight back to Naples from Torino, and vials supposedly filled with tears of locals who cried upon his acrimonious departure from Italy in March 1991. For a time, it was the perfect match. Maradona needed a home and Naples needed a savior. San Gennaro is the city's patron saint, but Maradona has obtained deity status. From 1984 to 1991, 515 children were registered as having the name Diego, with 12 receiving the full Diego Armando treatment. We have a lack of houses, schools, buses, employment, and sanitation. But none of this matters because we have Maradona, declared a local newspaper. We need to go through some of these goals. We're not going to go through all six of them. We don't have time for that today, but I do recommend that any listeners out there that want to read about these six particular goals, click on the link. It is in the description. Emmett Gates, the author of this article, now joins us on Lego Football.
Thanks for having me back on the show. And always a pleasure to talk about El Diego.
Yeah, first time I've had you back, especially since we've been to Italy and back with the Lega road trip. And we went and watched Juve play away at Milan. We went to Cremona. We went to Florence. We ended up in Naples. And we did the Murales Maradona tour with a guided tour. And for those of you who've been watching, Alessandro, the Neapolitan local, he took us around to show us some of the Maradona murals that you won't see on your regular walk. So I do advise to go and check that out. Emmett is the star of that, by the way. You're a superstar.
Because you outed me as a Juventino whilst in Naples.
I think you outed yourself in some of your previous publications, buddy. But for those Napoli fans out there, we have to accept Emmett as an honorary Diego fan at the very least, even though he's a Juventino. Look, he gets a bit of stick in that series, in the Maradona tour. So you get to meet Emmett in the video, a momentous occasion for Juventini in Naples. It's shaky ground, dangerous territory, but you did it. You braved it and you came out unscathed.
Yeah. Well, I definitely wasn't wearing a Juve shirt in Naples because I actually cherished my life. I wasn't willing to take that risk.
Yeah, well, we made a few threats to out you to some of the locals. Let's go through some of these goals. Napoli and Verona in October 1985. You write that Maradona knew little of Naples and the prevailing attitude from the north of Italy when he joined in 1984. Tell us how he rose to the occasion and punished Verona.
Maradona's introduction, basically, to Italy and the north-south divide came... His debut was against Hellas Verona's in the Stadio Bentegodi in September 1984. And he basically, for the first time, he saw the Verona Ultras with, you know, the racist, you know, slogans, you know.
The Lavatevi, wash yourself, yeah.
Yeah, wash yourselves and Vesuvius will erupt. And that was his introduction, essentially, to not just Italian football, but Italian life. And anybody, you know, David, you spent a lot of time in Italy, as have I. And perhaps maybe the North-South divide isn't as divided as it once was, but there is certain elements that still, you know, there are still certain elements of it, and it always finds itself in Italian football, or more specifically with the Ultras. It is an issue that is still ongoing. But so this was basically essentially Maradona's introduction to Italy and Serie A. And Hellas actually shackled Diego. I think they won 2-0 that day, or 2-1. And basically Verona then went on to win Lo Scudetto that season in one of the greatest fairy tales in the history of sport. 6 years ago, we got Leicester, who won in the Premier League. The equivalent of that would be when Verona won Serie A in the mid-80s, when it was by far the hardest league in the world. The way Maradona functioned as a footballer was almost like, it's the modern-day equivalent would be like Ibrahimovic. He needs an enemy to slay. There needs to be a beast. I don't know if you, David, or any of the listeners have seen The Last Dance, the Michael Jordan documentary about the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, great series. Loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah. So, like, you know, Michael Jordan then would just invent enemies in his head. He's like, he played his best when he had a point to prove. And he would, you know, either with imaginary enemies or not. Maradona was the same. He was at his best when he was angry. And he was pissed off, for want of a better word.
Let's go with incazzato. Arrabbiato is the first word I would like to teach people, but incazzato is another one. Your point being, though, Emmett, is that Maradona needed to slay the Goliath. He needed to throw the stone.
And he needed an enemy. And so then Verona was the first of such enemies. And then by the second season, Verona, as the defending champions, they go to the San Paolo.
Yeah, so it's Maradona slaying Goliath, finally.
And Diego just absolutely destroys him. You know, he gets the ball. I think it's, if memory serves, is from a goal kick. He breaks Verona's offside trap, and he's some 30, 40 yards out on the left-hand side, and just smashes the ball with the outside of his foot, and it just lobs over the goalkeeper and pings off the post. It was a marvellous goal, and I think, again, if memory serves right, he scored a hat-trick in that game. So Napoli win 5-0. If you ever read Diego's book, El Diego, it was an autobiography that was released in 2000, I think. He talks about vaccinating his opponents, basically like destroying them and sending them on their way. And this is what he did to Verona. And Verona, as defending champions, weren't that good, actually. Diego thrived on conflict. And this was the beginning of Maradona building up enemies in his head that had to be slain. I think for the rest of the 80s, he tormented Verona, just as he did, just about did any other team.
Another enemy for Diego was Juventus in the mid-80s, and just the next month he got to play them. And this is your second goal that you write about in this piece.
The game against Verona was October 1985, and two games later, at the beginning of November, Juventus come to town. And David, as you know, as we walked around the Quartieri Spagnoli region of Naples on our trip, the sentiment against Juve is not good.
Yeah, I remember taking you into that butcher shop, and also a lovely toilet roll with the Juventus logo on there. So I'm not sure what the club are going to do about that. Maybe the Juventus want to get in on some of that action themselves.
Yeah, the way Juventus have been this season, they would need some of it, to be honest.
They might have Max's image upon that. Who knows?
Yeah, and maybe Adrian Rabiot, but that's another podcast for another time. Juve are the enemy to Neapolitans. It's not Inter, it's not Milan. No other team is hated in Naples than Juve, because they're seen as the northern establishment and the team that always gets the breaks.
And they had Platini, who was the best player, yeah, I mean, at least pre-Maradona.
Yeah, I mean, you had that Zico was kind of the best early in the early 80s, and then you had this mid period where Platini takes over. He wins three consecutive Ballon d'Ors. You know, he was scoring double figures every season, and Juve were dominating. No, I wouldn't say dominating Italian football, but they won multiple Scudetti under that great Giovanni Trapattoni side.
Yeah, and they were definitely the biggest team of the time. Even though they weren't winning that many Italian Scudetti, they were still the most prominent side in terms of European representation. And also given that Milan were relegated soon before that. So Juventus definitely the strongest side at that time.
Yeah, exactly. And Juventus were reigning champions, or European champions. And in this game, obviously, they won their first European Cup in May 1985 in the tragic events of Heysel, which is not really something to be celebrated, but they were European champions. And going down to Naples. You know, Napoli hadn't beaten Juve at all, home or away, for 12 years. So this game is, you know, at this point, this game was the biggest game. It's always the biggest game of the calendar. Juventus going down south. And it was basically, it was Maradona against Platini to see who was the best player in the world, essentially, at this point. Even though Maradona wasn't legible to win Ballon d'Ors because the rule didn't change until 1985. When anyone could win it at that point, it was only Europeans that were allowed in contention. So it was always a game, you know, realistically, Maradona probably would have won two or three Ballon d'Ors if he had been allowed. So they went to Platini, and Platini was, you know, he was majestic. He was in his pomp at this point, and he was the driving force for that great Juve side of the mid-80s. I still, to this day, don't know why Napoli get a free kick inside the penalty box.
As you wrote, it's a bizarre indirect free kick, and Napoli hadn't beaten Juventus for 12 years. And this was the moment for Diego to step up.
Yeah, exactly. And usually you would think in this modern day, there's a free kick inside the penalty area, it must be a back pass. But the back pass rule didn't come into play until 1992, 7 years later. So I don't know. In the footage that I watched in preparation to write the article for this goal, I couldn't find out actually why there was a free kick inside the box.
I'll tell you why, because God scripted it that way. It was a moment in history, a moment on the time and space continuum where we get to explain to you the pure brilliance of this goal in our podcast right now.
Yeah, exactly. And if you watch the goal, the distance between Diego, the wall, and the net is minimal, maybe 8 yards, 7 yards at best. You know, that the Juventus wall is not 10 yards back. And the only thing he could do is dink the ball over the wall. There wasn't enough distance to get it up and down the way Maradona would traditionally bend a free kick. The ball's rolled off into his path, and he literally, like a golf chip, just chips it. It's almost like he had a wedge, a golfing wedge, and he just so elegantly just dinks it into the top corner. Then cue absolute delirium from the San Paolo.
Yeah, we've got some audio of this goal. The commentary is in Italian, but we'll take you through it.
Giusta la punizione.
The free kick given correctly.
È giusta anche l'interpretazione dell'arbitro Redini.
The referee interpreted it well.
E Pecci sta per toccare il pallone per Maradona, mentre siamo al 26esimo minuto.
So there's another midfielder, ecco, there Pecci. Next to Maradona. His name is Pecci, Araldo Pecci, played with Italy in the 70s and only played one season with Napoli, but perhaps the person with the best view of this goal ever.
Maradona, che azzecca l'angolo alto proprio l'incrocio dei pali.
To Tacconi's left.
In vantaggio il Napoli. 26esimo
puts Napoli into the lead.
Della ripresa, gol di Maradona.
Not the most excitement you'll ever hear from a commentator. Perhaps he's a Juventino fan.
È il quinto successo in campionato per l'asso argentino del Napoli.
So this audio taken from the Rai commentary.
Ad effetto precisissimo proprio all'incrocio dei pali.
Right in the top corner.
Non c'era proprio niente da fare per il portiere della Juve.
Nothing to do for the keeper. He had no chance. But I can tell you, the stadium erupted exactly like Vesuvius. Excuse the expression. I know it's been overused, that one. It was the free kick, at least of that decade. Unbelievable. The opulence of the great Diego Maradona. And it was a wet day. People were sliding all around the stadium, celebrating.
You know, fans had heart attacks. A couple of them had to go to hospital.
I mean, we're talking about a bizarre indirect free kick, as you've written, where it's to the right of the goal. The wall is not 10 yards away, and he managed to get it over that. Just superb, the pedigree from the man. And this is why people still say that he is the best, even though Messi and Ronaldo have been around and other players. Maradona was never babied through. He never had the facilities. He never had the coaching. He never had the backup. He always had the media after him, whereas now players are very guarded and they're trained, they're media trained. You know, we all know he wasn't. He was very outspoken. And a score a goal of this magnitude is just unbelievable.
We bring this up, you know, the greatest of all time. And to me, you can't compare eras. Because, I mean, if you look at the goals in this article alone, the pitches that he played on, they were like potato fields. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it was wet that day.
Yeah, exactly. But I think when it comes right down to it, there's no player in human history that could manipulate a football like Maradona could. He could bend a football to his will and make it do whatever he wanted. And this goal is evidence of that. The fact that he gets that up and down with minimal touch, really. You know, he just literally chips it the way a golfer would chip a golf ball out of a sand bunker on a golf course, just elegantly just lifts it up and into the top corner of Stefano Tacconi's goal. And it was Napoli's first win against Juve for 12 years. And that kind of set Napoli on the path to, you know, what would come next, which was, you know, the Scudetto in the third season.
When you look at it back at his career, this is one of those goals, along with the one against Verona that we've talked about at number three. The way he finessed it into that top corner, the way he also finessed the goal against Verona into the top corner, beating the world's best goalkeepers of the day. We're not going to talk about number one only because I want listeners to click on the link and go and see what that goal is. Listeners, you know two of these goals. There's four others, but we still haven't told you about number one. So make sure you read about this. Emmett Gates is one of the best writers that I know. And I'm not just saying that because he's on the phone to me right now. So, Emmett, while I've got you here, let's talk about the Lega football trip that we undertook. We'll say, it was an absolute pleasure to go on that trip with you and Andrea. We met so many great people. We went to so many great places and we kind of did it with ease. I mean, the logistics behind getting around Italy were quite easy this time. We started off in Milan. We flew in from London. It all worked like clockwork, except for that result at the San Siro.
Yeah, well, I think a shout out must go to our friend Federico, who helped us out massively on the Sunday, because we didn't know that there was a train strike in Italy on the Sunday, which meant we would have missed the Cremonese-Napoli game. So a shout out to Federico.
Well, you've debunked everything I just said about clockwork. So yes, thanks to Federico for flying over from Argentina during lockdown to start a new life in Milan. He moved into an apartment, bought a car, and thank you, he got us to Cremona the next morning, which is about an hour and a half drive. So thank you, Federico. Go on, Emmett. What else can you debunk about the trip?
Aside from that morning, everything else went well. We got trains, you know, we got the train from Cremona to Florence, and we went from then Florence under to Naples, and everything worked smoothly. But yeah, I mean, it was a fantastic trip. We got, you know, four games in 5 days in four different cities.
The Serie A stars aligned.
This worked out perfectly. You know, we got a match on a Saturday, a Sunday, a Monday, and then we got a Champions League match on a Wednesday. So we got 17 goals, you know, and we got a lot of action, and it was just a fantastic trip. If anybody...
Yeah, two Napoli wins in there, thank you.
Yeah, two
thank
Napoli wins.
A Juventus loss and two Napoli wins, which is great for me. And how about that loss at home for Fiorentina? It was a dire atmosphere. We were sitting in amongst the Viola fans, and the highlight of the game, apart from some spectacular goals, was the world-class Academia winning performance by Lucas in his Lazio strip and giving it to all the Fiorentina fans. Brilliant stuff.
Yeah, it was trolling on a serious level, but in person and surrounded by Fiorentina fans, and it was one of the highlights of the trip. It was so good.
Yeah, and I managed to actually film that and put it up on Twitter, and it went viral for a couple of days, which is so many people love seeing a bit of trolling, especially face-to-face kind of stuff. So
he is appreciated by the Lega football crew.
Yeah, he was all the talk of the next day's trip down from Florence to Naples.
Exactly. But I was just going to say, if any of the listeners of the Lega football podcast, if you haven't did a football-orientated trip around Italy, I would highly recommend it. If you can work out, if you get 3 or 4 or 5 free days, and if the fixtures are kind, definitely do it. It is physically taxing because you get up early, you get on trains, go to the game, rinse and repeat, but it is absolutely worth it. And if you get great games in the way that we get great games, it's worth every penny and it's worth the effort.
It is worth it. I was going to say, you can't buy these experiences, but you can because we paid for everything. But still, to relive these moments, and we took a bit of footage and, you know, we took a few selfies. We had a good time. We had a few drinks after games to celebrate. I mean, I still can't believe outside the Stadio Diego Armando Maradona after the game, it clears out so quickly and no one goes to the local bars to have a drink. We were expecting it to be chaos after the game, and it was a nice, relaxed atmosphere. It's not as bad as what you think, as some people will say about the hooliganism, but I guess it just depends on the match and the time of year and the rest of it. But I really recommend for people from the UK and other European countries, I guess it's most convenient for them to do this kind of thing. And it doesn't have to be Serie A either. It could be Serie B, Serie C. You can intermix between the leagues, whatever you can logistically organize in a particular area. We did straight down the guts from Milan all the way to Naples, but we did it with the fast train, the Freccia Rossa, and it was comfortable.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there was no issues really, apart from, as I said, that Sunday with the strike. But the actual train journeys that we did manage to get on, they were all, you know, everything went smoothly and we got where we were supposed to get to and there was no problems.
I think we've talked ourselves into doing it again.
Oh yeah, I mean, we've already, as we said, if Napoli win the league, we'll probably be in Naples on the final day of the season, because being in Naples on that weekend would be like we thought the
incredible
the Napoli Ajax game, the atmosphere around the city was great. But imagine if they win the league, like they would party like it's 1999.
Well, they're going to add more faces to the Maradona mural area of the Spanish Quarter. I mean, we've already seen that they have added a few extra players in there, especially the likes of Kim and Kvaratskhelia and
Anguissa as well.
Yeah, Anguissa's there, and you know, we've met the artist that actually puts those murals together as well, which will be releasing that footage. It's going to be massive. And Emmett, I'll just get you in on a little secret here. I've pre-booked my Naples accommodation for match day 38 of Serie A, just in case. Don't blame me if somehow they don't actually win it, but this is just in case.
Yeah, just in case. I mean, the way they're playing now, it's difficult to see a team in Serie A stopping them. The only thing that can stop Napoli at this point is themselves.
Yeah, or a couple of injuries. I think their weakest spot is at the back. If Kim and Romani have been great, and so have Ostergaard and Juan Jesus filling in on occasion. But if Kim goes down at any stage, it could be a disaster. But I might not even put this in the pod because I don't want to actually make it happen. I don't want to manifest it, Emmett. So
you're gonna will it to happen, David.
So yeah, what a trip that was. Can't recommend it enough. We're gonna do it again, I think, Emmett. And Andrea, what a character he was. Such a great guy, Torino fan, and he came along for the ride.
Yeah, I think for any of our listeners, Andrea is a friend of ours who grew up a Milan fan, but kind of grew out of love with the game after the events of Istanbul in 2005, and somehow then become a Torino fan because his dad.
Yeah, his lineage. So his family are from Piemonte, and well done to him for not choosing a big team by default, although he did when he was a kid, and I guess he was born in Milan, so well done to Andrea. And he's back and he's loving it, and he's secretly following Napoli, I think, just like Emma Gates is.
Yeah, I think our trip has rekindled his passion for calcio.
Yeah, and pizza and Aperol Spritz as well. So we're going to leave it there, but I do recommend for listeners to go and read some of Emmett's good work. He's written not just this piece on Diego Maradona, but others as well. But these six goals in particular have been highlighted in this Guardian article by Emmett Gates for The Gentleman Ultra, and he's given a backstory and explanations of the goals. Emmett Gates, thanks for joining us once again.
A pleasure, David.
This is Lega Football.
Let's take you through some of the big moments in Serie A. Salernitana hit Lazio where it hurts, and Ivan Provedel was finally beaten by an Antonio Candreva wonder goal following his unbeaten run of 620 minutes without conceding. And the Salernitana social media team claiming it was Notti Magiche. Serie A Twitter asking the question, cos'è più dolce, zucchero, miele, cioccolato, il tocco di Candreva? They're asking, what's sweeter, sugar, honey, chocolate, or that touch from Antonio Candreva? Ivan Juric and Torino then doing Atalanta, Inter and Juventus a favour by taking down AC Milan at the Grande Torino. Fagioli's glorious strike, his very first in Serie A, that banked another 3 points for La Vecchia Signora. Correa and Co crushed Sampdoria. Arthur Cabral stole it for Fiorentina, and Atalanta doing enough to stave off Empoli. Cremonese held Udinese to get their 5th point of the campaign. The race for the Scudetto gets interesting now. Napoli is the only unbeaten side in Serie A, but takes on the mighty 2nd-placed Atalanta on match day 13. Serie A Monday saw Monza losing at home to Bologna in that 6-pointer. The goals coming from Petagna, Ferguson and Orsolini. Christian Volpato, the Italian-Australian, with a goal and an assist to break Verona into pieces right at the death on Monday evening. Let's take a look at the standings now. We'll go from bottom up to the top. Cremonese and Verona that share 5 points at the bottom of the Italian top flight. Sampdoria on 6 points, and they are the three sides in the relegation zone. Lecce, Spezia and Monza above them. The side with the poorest form is poor old Verona, the Giallo Blue. They've now lost at least the last five on the trot. They've conceded 24 goals to have the worst defense, and Sampdoria with the worst attack, scoring just 6 times from 12 games. Further up the table is Fiorentina and Bologna with 13 points. Sassuolo and Salernitana round out the bottom half of the table. Of course, Salernitana now up into 10th spot with that win over Lazio. Sensational stuff for the Granata. And the other side, also known as the Granata Torino, in 9th spot. And they've won 3 successive games now. They've beaten Cittadella in the Italian Cup, then Udinese away from home, and then Milan at home, both by a scoreline of 2-1. So good work for Ivan Juric. The two Bianconeri sides, Udinese and Juventus, both locked on 22 points. Juventus in a good run of form, winning 4 from their last 5, and Udinese just winning the 1. So they have dipped in form, but still, credit has to go to their coach, Andrea Sottil. Now with the top 6, it's Lazio and Inter in 5th and 6th, both on 24 points. Inter with 4 wins on the trot, and Lazio still in some good form despite the loss to Salernitana, 3 wins from the last 5. Christian Volpato and Stefan El Shaarawy's late goals got Roma over the line in Verona at the Bentegodi. They're on 25 points with that result. What a difference a few minutes can make at the end of a game. So Roma in 4th, Milan now in 3rd spot with that loss to Torino. Atalanta leap over the Rossoneri into 2nd. They have 27 points, but they are 5 points away from league leaders Napoli. Luciano Spalletti's side with 32 points, still unbeaten, and 2 draws to go with that. They drew with Lecce and Fiorentina at the beginning of the season. They are on a run of 13 straight wins throughout Serie A and the UEFA Champions League. Alex Meret was brilliant in staving off the Sassuolo attack. 4 decent saves that I can remember in this game against the Neroverdi. Mario Rui, now with a contribution of 6 assists this season across all competitions. That's the most for any defender in the big 5 European leagues in 2022-23. And on the back of 13 straight wins, Jurgen Klopp also singing Napoli's praises in the lead-up to the matchday 6 UEFA Champions League clash at Anfield between Liverpool and the Azzurri.
Napoli's in incredible shape, plays incredible football, top of the table in Italy, maybe the team in form in Europe in the moment, so they have a good chance to go to the final. That's how it is, how I said to them. I think Napoli is in the moment the team in form in Europe.
So Klopp, knowing what he's up against this Tuesday on matchday 6 of the Champions League, Napoli looking to secure 6 wins from 6 group games, and it will be some effort if they can do that. The winning streak has to come to an end at some time, and this is a massive, massive week for Luciano Spalletti with Liverpool first up, then Atalanta. It is second in the group against first in their Champions League group, then second in Serie A against the league leaders. So many eyes have seen what Napoli brings, and they're flying the flag for Italian football right now on the European stage. Every journalist and his carne are writing something or putting some content together about Napoli. And on that note, we've got part 2 of the Maradona tour, our trip with Lega Football up to the Murales Maradona a few weeks ago when Napoli hosted Ajax. We were there on that game day. We went into the Quartieri Spagnoli. Here is episode 2.
Maradona.
Part 2.
Ho visto Maradona.
These are the hidden gems of Naples where someone like Alessandro will let us see these. He knows where they all are.
And this is the advantage of having someone like this man.
Thank you.
Take us
Thank
around.
You guys.
Tell us more about this shrine.
The man who made this edicola is the owner of this macelleria. And he did it for his friend that is a Juventino, Juve fan. And he put a sciarpa. If you read Napoletano Juventino, ti schifano a Napoli pure a Torino.
So he's done it to taunt his Juventus supporting friend.
Napoletan fan, they hate here in Naples and also in Turin.
Wow. Actually, this goes hand in hand with the Cartagenica we saw yesterday, your Juventus side with their own toilet roll.
Yeah.
Emmett was quietly nervous that Alessandro would realise he's a Juventino.
Buongiorno.
On Roman balconies, you'd find pictures of the Pope, but here in Naples, it's all about Diego, and occasionally, their other Neapolitan deity, Pino Daniele. That's Pino on the right. In fact, you'll often hear his music played at the Maradona on match day.
One of the oldest pictures of Maradona available. Who's this by, Alessandro?
By Sergio Siano, Neapolitan photographer that documents all the life of Maradona.
Unlike the rest of us, Sergio Siano had actually visto Maradona, and his most iconic Diego images were recently showcased at an exhibition in Naples. They say every dog has their day, and indeed, this was our day, as Alessandro convinced this business owner to let in the gringos. Nodding and smiling, fully pretending to understand Napolitan dialect, I was welcomed in. On the pitch, Maradona formed part of the Magica trio. But if Naples was Gotham City, Maradona would be their Batman, and Robin would almost certainly be Pino.
There is a picture of Diego and Pino together.
Oh, yeah, look at that one.
Hairdressers, butchers, and artists and randoms on the streets of Napoli. Keep with us as we continue our ascent up to the Murales Maradona in part three. And you can watch that video. It's up on our Facebook page and it's also our pinned tweet. So if you go to our Twitter profile, so when you go there, you'll see episode one as our pinned tweet, and then have a look in the comments of that tweet for episode two and three. And episode four is coming this week. Time for a Serie B update. We'll take you through the scores. Perugia nil, Cittadella 2, Genoa drew with Brescia 1-1. Benevento and Pisa also drew 0-0. Another draw between Cagliari and Regina 1-1. Cosenza losing at home to the now league leaders Frosinone 2-1. Palermo with their first victory in 50 days against Modena. Parma beating Como 1-0. Spal and Sudtirol drawing 1-1. Venezia losing at home 2-0 against visitors Ascoli. And Bari and Ternana drew 0-0. So lots of close results in the Italian second division. Frosinone with 4 straight wins. They now have the outright lead above Genoa. 24 points for Frosinone, 22 points for Genoa. Ternana on 20, then 3 clubs, Regina, Bari and Parma on 19 points, and another 3 on 18 points. That's Ascoli, Brescia and Sudtirol, who were technically in 9th spot, but they are the teams in the running for the playoffs at the moment. Cagliari, Spal, Cittadella, Modena, Palermo and Pisa make up the guts of the table. The playout section now features Cosenza and Benevento. Surprisingly, Venezia, Como and Perugia. A ghastly season for the Arancionero Verdi and the Grifone at the bottom. Perugia with 7 points. The top scorers in the division, it's Khedira of Bari, still with 8 goals. He leads by 3 over Coda and Antenucci, with Riozzi, who are on 5 goals, Matteo Brunori, Dionisi, Lamantia, Dio, and a whole host of others on 4. In the Italian top division now, we have a new challenger for the capocannoniere. Challenging Marco Arnautovic of Bologna is Victor Osimhen of Napoli, both with 7 goals, and Osimhen technically on top due to the 1 assist that he's provided. Then it's his teammate, Kavica Kvaratskhelia, with 6 goals. He's joined by Ciro Immobile, Lautaro Martinez, and Dusan Vlahovic. In Serie C, in Group A, Renate, Lecco, and Pordenone with Novara, the top 4. In Group B, it's Gubbio and Entella with 23 points each. They're joined by Reggiana and Cesena close behind, with Siena and Carrarese. And Lega Pro Group C. Lega Pro Group C, after 11 matches, it's Catanzaro and Crotone up the top. Catanzaro have the outright lead. Pescara and Calcio Giuliano are up there as well. But Catanzaro, along with Napoli, they're the only two professional football sides on the peninsula that are undefeated still. We'll see if either of these clubs can hang on to that this week. Catanzaro actually hosts Crotone in what could be one of the matches of the season of this girone, this group. For Napoli, though, a much tougher task away at Anfield against Liverpool in the Champions League, and then taking on the second place side, Atalanta, away in Bergamo. Don't forget, if you can, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and subscribe on YouTube. We are at Lega Football. Don't be shy to comment and tell us exactly what you think. We're interested in hearing from the fans and other interested parties. Special thanks going out to Emma Gates for joining us. And of course, special thanks for Diego Maradona for supplying so much content for us to talk about. It was his 62nd birthday on the 30th of October. Happy birthday, Diego. I'm David Farini, your LEGO Football host. We'll be looking forward to the midweek Champions League games as Inter travel to take on Bayern Munich. Milan hosts Salzburg, Juventus hosts PSG. Lazio goes to the Netherlands to take on Feyenoord. Ludogorets visit the Olimpico to take on Roma. Fiorentina plays away at RFS. So good luck to the Italian sides in European competition, and we look forward to the weekend's action. Ci vediamo.
This is Lega Football.